in the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, cleared for the option.
Line up and wait, 7 range. 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 5321, Mike, and it downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
All right, welcome to episode 10 of the In the Pattern Podcast. Tonight, right now, for right now anyways, it's just me and Mark. John's away for the moment, but he might jump in here in a little bit and finish up with this. But for the meantime, it's Mark and I, and we're actually, I guess, the only ones who've been flying since last time anyway. So for that, we will get going into this episode. Last time, what was going on? I think I'd done like my first solo cross country. Mark, you were just getting ready to get started on that.
Yep.
And speaking of that, it just so happens that tonight was your first dual cross country?
Correct. It was first dual short. It was a 62-mile straight line. So that was finally get to do some... go somewhere, as somebody on Twitter put it. It's nice to actually train and go somewhere, and it was.
And you've been fighting a lot of weather issues up there is what's been holding you back, huh?
Absolutely. For about the last 3.5 weeks, it's just been torrential. The ski resorts up in the Sierras love it. Down here, we're just sopping wet. Today was a picture-perfect day to go fly, and I definitely jumped on it and took advantage of it.
Good deal. So smooth air on the way?
Oh, it was awesome. There was no turbulence, no bumps, nothing. A little bit of haze. The air was very stable.
That reminds me of my last cross country too. And you know how they said if the ground is clear, then you've got turbulence because it's windy, it's blowing the stuff out or something.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And if it's all junky looking, it's because it's all still and quiet and it's just all laying low.
Yeah.
And I got some pictures of that too. It's just nasty looking Phoenix area, Valley, Arizona, you know, because we've got mountains all around and stuff, and it's just a gunky brown haze, but very smooth up there at every altitude I was at. And so that was kind of similar for you today.
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to take some pictures today too, because I flew by some pretty cool places. But I just had too much going on, and like I was telling you offline, I'm actually kind of falling in John's footprints. So I have a new instructor. My previous instructor is taking a little bit of leave to deal with some personal issues. But so now my new instructor, of all the people in the school, is a chief flight instructor. This is the guy that normally does your stage checks, and it's kind of harder on people. And I'm like, well, you know what? If I'm going to fly with somebody, this is the guy I want to fly with. So
I couldn't agree more. That would be the person to go with for sure.
Yeah, they kind of gave me a group of people, and I had when I first initially started my training, I started with one of the co-owners, a former F-15 driver, who's actually now you've heard in previous episodes that he was activated and he's active duty Air Force again. He's at Randolph flying T-38s. But one of his partners was available. And then Bo Perry, who's the chief flight instructor, he was also available. And I was thinking, you know, I think Mike's a great guy, and I would love to fly with Mike, but I think I want to go with Bo because I think Bo's going to give me the kind of square training that I'm going to need. He's going to tell me, you know, you're doing great or you suck, and not even think about it. And that's kind of what I wanted to have right now, especially for, you know, not flying for the past 3.5-4 weeks. And it was a great experience, and I really want to stick with Bo until I'm done. And he kind of feels the same. He thinks we could do well together, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Good deal. So the trip was, what did you say,
62 nautical miles.
62 nautical miles in a straight line, and so what kind of navigation did you do along the way?
Well, this one, the school's policy, and it may be other schools' policy, but we wanted to kind of do pilotage, dead reckoning, and then some true navigation using VOR, GPS, and everything else. And
cool.
So I used all of the above. He was actually kind enough to show me how to use the autopilot. And in this Archer that I fly, it's only a two-axis autopilot, but it was awesome. You know, we got where I needed to be heading-wise, and he goes, okay, flip these two switches on right here, and boom, rock solid, except for, you know, I just needed to control my own altitude.
What kind of an autopilot is it? You know who makes it?
You know, I don't know. I really haven't dug that deep into it. So the other stuff that he wanted me to do was I had to do the flight plan, do the whole thing out with all my checkpoints, and he wanted to make sure that I could do that, and he reviewed that before we took off. And then I did my pre-flight, got the plane, taxied down to the run-up area, and he goes, okay, call up flight service and file your flight plan. So I'm like, okay. And we kind of talked about it before, but I was like, I thought maybe he was going to say, this is how you do it, and he's going to call him up. He goes, no, it's your flight. You're going to call him.
Did you get a standard briefing at that time, or?
They actually asked me if I wanted one, and I said no, because we had actually just reviewed the weather.
Okay.
Probably within the previous 10 minutes. So we're sitting in the run-up area at idle. I pull back my, because I don't have a Zulu or anything with the Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. I just have a regular David Clarks. Pull back my headset and actually call him up on my iPhone.
Oh, okay.
And he said it's actually easier to do it that way than to get on 122.2 and call flight service via the radio. He goes, because most times you try to do it that way, you're already climbing through your elevation or your altitude that you need to be. And for this trip, I was actually flying through Class Charlie airspace of Beale Air Force Base.
Now, are you referring to opening it or actually creating it?
Creating it and opening it.
Oh.
So by the time you go through, you know, reading everything, you know, here's the tail number, here's the, you know, the equipment that it has, you know, souls
right
on board, everything you need to do to file, you're already, you know,
mm-hmm,
you're already 10 minutes down the your flight.
Yeah.
He said, so just pick up the phone. He goes, it's actually quicker and easier to do it that way. So that's what I did.
And you just call 1-800-WX-BRIEF?
Yep.
Okay.
And then
I do that from the FBO.
And I could have done it there, but he goes, we'll just get the plane and do it down there. And okay. So
and then I'm always seem to be running late because, you know, it closes automatically. They'll close it automatically if you don't open it within a certain amount of time that you say that you were going to take off.
Right. Right. And we actually were waiting for one of the owners and other instructors to get back because they didn't want to leave the FBO there wide open with nobody in the building. So he goes, we could have called up. He goes, we'll just get down there. We'll file it and open it all at the same time. And then we'll get in the air and then see if we can make it to our destination. So it worked out pretty well. I mean, it's kind of the first few parts of filing the plan are voice activated, automated. It was different. I've never had a phone conversation with a computer like that before.
Yeah. You say briefer.
Yeah, exactly. And for California.
Arizona, California, right, yeah.
What part of California are you in? Northern? Okay. You know. So filed the flight plan and then opened it. He goes, well, do you want to open it right now? I said, yeah. I said, we're actually going to be taking off in about 2 minutes. He goes, okay, I'll give you three and then I'll open it for you. So we did that. Took off normal. Everything was great. Climbed out. Contacted NorCal Approach. And it was kind of cool. I've had friends go, you know, I'm flying with them. They'll call up NorCal Approach, you know, for me, Archer 8321 mic request. And I finally got to do that myself. It was pretty cool. You know, and then requested flight follow.
Power.
Yeah, it was cool. And then NorCal Approach, and they're a group of great people because he was very forgiving. Not that I made any mistakes, but maybe it's just the tone of my voice. I wasn't like authoritarian, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm Joe Pilot's been flying for 50 years. I know what I'm doing. I'm like, we'd like to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Can we? You know?
Yeah. Please? Did I say that right?
Can I get flight following, please? Mm-hmm. You know? So they were pretty cool about that. And so I got flight following and got my squawk code. And then we transitioned Beale Air Force Base's airspace. Never even had to talk to the tower. I thought we would have had to make contact with them. But I guess once you get your code from – your transponder code from the approach – control. That's all you got to do. So, well, once I had my transponder code, we just cruised right on through, followed my little red line on my chart, and kept cruising through all my checkpoints. And it was interesting doing it on paper and planning it. You have all your times and your fuel burn and everything. And I was surprised. My first three, I was within probably 30 seconds. And I was like, there's no way that I'm that close.
Yeah, I know.
And but the next one, I was like a minute out because the winds had changed as we got deep, more north up in the valley.
Oh, yeah.
And so we caught more of a headwind, and so it slowed us down. But it was funny. On the way back, I set it up the same exact thing. We're cruising back at 5,500. And I'm looking at the GPS, and we got a ground track of 138 knots. I'm like, sweet.
There you go. Yeah.
And I've got like 107 indicated, you know.
Yeah, that's good for the fuel burn. So you get to make it up on the way back.
I was gonna throttle back. He's all, no. Let's take advantage of this.
We'll take it. Yeah. So now you're a little quicker to each checkpoint. So
yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, and then completely right. Screwed up all my numbers.
Yeah.
You know. He's like, don't worry about it. And then I was very meticulous, and I had a place, you know, where to descend, and at this many miles out, I need to do my descent. And he goes, you know, that's great, and I want you to know that, but you know that at this distance, especially with a tailwind like this, we need to descend a little sooner, get into pattern altitude. And it was a good learning experience. I had a great time.
Excellent.
Saw a lot of things, and I was impressed. And beautiful scenery. I love flying.
Yeah, no better view than from up there.
I love the world at 3,000 feet plus, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you had a nice tailwind coming home, making up some good time and saving fuel, which is the fun part for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, your price for rentals including fuel, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. It was still out and back. It was still 1.7, but you know, it was totally worth it. It kicked ass.
Mm-hmm. 1.7. I think that's what my last one was exactly, actually. No, it wasn't. Never mind. That was a different one. 2.5 was my last
one. I was going to say, you've had some lately that have been some long ones.
Yeah. The one before last at Kingman was 133 miles one way.
Wow.
And so speaking of flight following, you know, I love that. Just at least there's someone talking in my headset.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, you've got somebody in your vicinity. Kind of keep an eye out for him.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, I actually got that call twice. Never saw him. I had
really?
It was 300 feet below me, 5 miles away, heading the opposite, kind of an opposite direction. And I was like, looking. My instructor was looking. Never saw him.
So supposedly they were coming at you at your 12 o'clock and they were 300 feet below you?
They were my 2 o'clock, 300 feet below, heading southeast, and I was going northwest. So yeah, obviously they were at the wrong altitude, but
we never did see them. You should be 1,000 feet apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, you were at 4,500, right?
Correct, and he was at
42. Then yeah, he was at the wrong altitude.
Yeah. So yeah, it was
VFR under IFR.
VFR.
What?
Oh, okay.
Who's this that's jumping in here?
What's up, stranger?
Stealth attack us like that?
About that.
Podcast jumper.
That's what it is.
John Conway, podcast ninja. What's up, guy?
Not much.
It's all like kinds of like coming up on midnight out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So we were just talking about Mark's flight today. His first dual cross country. It was a good one.
So I gathered.
It was good. It was nice and calm. I had fun. It was a good learning experience, and I was telling Chris and the rest of the podcast that I'm now in your midst of multiple instructors. My new instructor is the chief flight instructor for the school. So oh. I had my choice of a couple, and I figured this is the guy that I should have. So
is he happen to be like an FAA examiner too that would be giving you your check ride?
No, he does all the stage checks for the school though.
Okay.
And he's the one that'll do your mock check ride. So you know, like I was saying before, he's been at this for 17 years. So as a CFI,
mm-hmm.
So I mean he knows all the. The designated inspectors or instructors or examiners, mm-hmm. the DPE, is that what it is?
DPE.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, I mean, he knows them all, and I'm sure he's ridden with several of them, so he knows what they're looking for, and he basically, on your mock check ride, he acts just like they do, and he'll give you the same exact, you know, test.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Excellent. Yeah. My buddy Todd, who just finished his a couple weeks ago, his flight instructor is also his DPE.
Wow.
For the FAA, so he is with the same person almost the whole time. You know, it's like two brothers, I think, own the flight school, and one of them happens to be an FAA examiner, so. The other brother is the one who taught him the majority of the time, and then he did his mock check ride and check ride with the owner, who was the DPE. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So anyways, you ran the whole gamut. You did the VOR navigation, pilotage, dead reckoning, got to use the GPS, got to use the
autopilot.
Autopilot, yeah.
Yeah. And he, you know, and
that's a lot to do in 60 some miles.
Exactly. Bo was really good about it too. He's like, you know, he goes, when you take your check ride, you are a private pilot. You're just got somebody along to make sure that you can, you know, do everything according to the PTS. Mm-hmm. And he goes, as a private pilot, you're going to use everything in this airplane to get you to where you need to go. Right. And I'm like, yeah, he goes, that's when he reached over and he flipped on the autopilot. He's all, well, there's something you could use.
Nice.
And, you should.
And I'm like, cool. So on the way back, when I got up to when I was, I think I was probably still 1,000 feet below my set cruising altitude, I reached over and I flipped it on. And he's like, oh, look at this. I show him something and he's going to use it.
There you go.
I said, absolutely. I've been dying for somebody to let me to say it's okay to actually use that, not have to stick and rudder it the whole time.
He's so, like, you remember mine. He yelled at me for not using it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you what were you waiting on, right?
Yeah. He's like, I don't know for the life of me why you did not use the autopilot there. And I was like, oops.
That's funny because I've told my instructor this, you know, and she still hasn't showed me how to use it. Although, what's to it? You turn the autopilot switch on so it powers up.
Yeah,
pre-check.
You know.
You got to check it on the ground.
Oh, you know, that'd be a good idea.
There is a bunch involved with it, just in procedure and safety.
Is there?
Yeah.
I don't see that on the
on
my checklist at all.
It's in the POH in the supplemental section.
Okay.
Chapter 9.
I will check Chapter 9 then. Of course, be different for me.
Probably not, because they're all pretty standard from what I've seen as far as chapters are concerned.
Really? Piper to a Cessna?
Yeah, because I was looking at Diamond and it was the same exact way. General limitations on like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So you turn it on and then, you know, you press the heading button. It's just going to go wherever you have the heading bug, right?
Oh, that's one way. Do you have a dual axis or a single axis?
Well, Mark's is a two axis, and mine's a STEC 55. It's a three axis, so it does altitude also.
Well, three axis would include yaw, would it not, or something? What's the other axis? It's got to be.
You got
Well, the two axis is gonna maintain roll and yaw, and then the three axis is gonna control pitch, which will be your altitude.
Altitude.
You sure? Because we have we call ours a two axis, and it controls roll and pitch.
Yeah, the one that I have doesn't. It's just it's yaw and roll.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Ours has a heading button, a nav button.
Ooh, the nav is fun.
Yeah, because that works right with your nav radios and VOR, right?
And ours is a nav GPS one, so we can actually switch it to the GPS and track the GPS.
Yeah, this whole thing is slaved to the GNS 430 on mine, so it should work like that. There's an approach heading, REV. I forget what that's for.
Reverse.
Yeah, so if you want to back up, no.
Yeah.
And then ALT for altitude, and then VS, vertical speed.
Yep.
And then there's a secondary display with some buttons and a knob on it also for, I think, dialing in specific information like that vertical speed, as far as like if you want to... If you're still on takeoff and you press the button, you tell it that you want to just climb to a certain altitude of 500 feet a minute. That's what it will do. Stuff like that. But I haven't turned it on yet. I'm waiting. And so what else, Mark? Anything else with that flight? How long did it take you? 1.7?
It was 1.7 total time from engine start to shut down. But
did you get out at the other airport, or did you just taxi back and take back off? Or?
No, we just did a taxi back and take off. Mm-hmm. Did left traffic out of there, got it to the end of the runway, basically a beam the end of the runway. And what's nice is that the VOR was actually on the field, so I actually got to see the VOR antenna itself. I mean, I've seen it from a distance, but we were, I don't know, 100 yards away from it, which was kind of cool. But then, so we were well away from, well above direct straight-in approach. So we were well above that, so we wouldn't interfere with them. So started heading back over to re-intercept the VOR radio that I was on previously.
Mm-hmm.
Caught the VOR, and out we went. And, playing chase the needle a little bit because the winds were kind of variable. At mm-hmm. altitude, but yeah, it was. I learned a lot, and Bo, he showed me a lot of things that I was very comfortable in the environment and comfortable with my flying, but it was just like he was showing me the next step of things that I need to know, which was really cool,
Excellent.
And so it made me a little bit more excited about the flight, and then after we were all said and done, he goes, okay. Here's your homework. I want you to plan basically that leg. We're going to throw another airport into the mix on the way back and then back home. So your homework is to plan that. And he said, and also that the next trip is going to be a little bit more difficult. I kind of looked at him funny, like, well, how do you mean difficult? He goes, I'm bringing the gauge placards. We're going to start failing gauges on you. I was like, oh, crap.
Already?
Yeah.
Nice.
I guess, like I said, this is the guy that I want to fly with. So, he's going to keep me honest. If I'm going to learn, I want to learn from the best. So,
yeah. Keep you on your toes.
So we'll see how the weather goes and what his availability and my availability is. And I'd like to do it by the end of the week, but we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
So that's pretty much the end of mine. So you've been flying your tail off.
Yeah, I've been trying to go as often as I can, and some weeks that I didn't fly, I found a buddy with an airplane and flew with him instead, starting back, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, I forget when it was. Yeah, probably 3 weeks ago, I did the trip to Kingman, and my plan was to go to Kingman and then over to Prescott and then back to Phoenix. And
Now, was this one by yourself, or was this with your instructor?
Yeah, it's solo. Nice. It's solo. And Kingman's 133 nautical miles in a straight line from Deer Valley. Wow. So that was fun. I had planned it all out, and believe it or not, for that distance, I only had, three checkpoints plus my home airport. Because we were talking last night about checkpoints when we were talking about your nav log doing your flight plan, but my first one was 15 miles away from Deer Valley. That's Lake Pleasant, piece of cake, easy to see. Everyone knows where that is. And then, you know, for me, not knowing what something's going to look like on the ground when I choose it as a target on the map, I start asking my instructor, all right, I chose blah, 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 this Hassayampai River Canyon. Am I going to be able to see that? You know, because it was 21 miles away from Lake Pleasant, and I was able to figure out what it looked like once I got there. Of course, you know what you're doing is you're saying, okay, well, I'm supposed to be at this next location after I pass Deer Valley in 12 minutes, so you know, for the next 10 to 15 minutes, you know, I'm looking out, you know, okay, here it is. This must be what it looks like. You know, this is what it is. This looks like a river canyon. So, you know, you finally get your bearings. And what I did on my last one, I started using Google Earth to figure out what it's going to look like from the sky.
That's a good idea.
So I'd plan my trip. Then I'd go on Google Earth and just start scrolling along, zooming in and out at various elevations, trying to figure out this is what I'm going to actually see in a picture view. So that really helps, by the way.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. then my next checkpoint is Baghdad, Arizona. and Baghdad, Arizona is nothing more than a copper mine. It's an open pit copper mine. A lot of you guys probably already saw the pictures to that. And I didn't even know there was such thing as a Baghdad, Arizona, except for my next door neighbor happened to work there umpteen years ago, and it's still a working copper mine. I think it's one of the, you know, the United States' largest open pit copper mine, actually, and that's a big ass hole in the ground, let me tell you. And they got an airport there, and put it to you this way. You better hope you have really good brakes, because if you don't, you just end up in the hole, because that's where it ends.
Wow.
You know, there's this kind of mesa that you land on and then off to never, never land. So that was pretty cool to see from the sky, and that was a piece of cake to work out. And then from there, I was about 55 nautical miles outside of Kingman. I just kept on my heading, and I shortly thereafter got the VOR over there. And navigated straight in on the VOR. I was at 8,500 feet.
Wow.
From my elevation. So I was woo, way up there.
I've never been that high.
But that was fun. So after I left Deer Valley, I jump on flight service and called to open my flight plan. Prescott Radio, Archer 354 Mike Alpha. Transmitting on, blah, 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 listening on, blah, blah, blah. No answer. I did that about two or three times, and I gave up. Either they were asleep or I was on the wrong frequency. Chances are I was on the wrong frequency. So I called Phoenix Approach and got flight following, and I was only with them for a few minutes, and they switched me over to Albuquerque Center. And, like I was talking, Mark, It was good just to have another person, you know, in my ear for a while, just listening to other people. And I never did get vectored for any traffic. I never did see, I never did see another airplane anywhere around me. But it was fun listening to those guys talk. And then about, I don't know, 30 or 40 miles from Kingman, I got switched over to LA Center. And then I dropped them after I was about 15 miles outside of Kingman. and got a hold of the ASOS or AWOS that's up there, and got the weather, and Kingman is an untowered airport, so I had to sound like an idiot and call my own traffic,
which was new for you.
Yeah, I'm still no good at that.
Talking to a tower is my thing. It's like actually having to talk to somebody. I'm used to just talking to space. I'm good at that.
Oh, but the tower is so easy. You call once.
Yeah. It was. You know what it was? And I was expecting to have to do a bunch of things, and Bo was like, no, he already cleared you for, you know, straight in. Give him a 3-mile call. Let him know you're there.
Oh, I love those, and I get them all the time. It's yes. Great.
After we landed, I was like, that was kind of cool. You know,
I love the tower.
We need to do that more often. And you know, after takeoff, I'm like, is he going to tell me what to do? And he's like, well, it's always left traffic unless otherwise specified. So go ahead and make a left turn. And if he doesn't like it, he'll tell you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. But you know, it was funny. You were talking about you got switched to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, 3/4 of the way out, I got switched to Oakland Center.
Uh-huh.
From NorCal Approach to Oakland Center, and then when we were within 10 miles, then we switched to Chico Tower, and then did our thing there. But yeah, it's weird to actually you hear about these places, and if you listen to Live ATC, it's like, wow, that's where the big boys play, and now it's nothing, you know. Now that I've done it a couple of times, it's like, well, that was kind of easy.
I'll do it as often as it's available.
Yeah, I absolutely will. Flight following is absolutely your friend.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was cool just hearing the guys that they'd be like, what do you call it? The Albuquerque Center would say, you know, like cactus, blah 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
And he'd release them to Phoenix Approach or whatever, and then Cactus, which is one of the, I think it's a U.S. Airways or it might be Southwest, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's U.S. Air.
U.S. Airway?
Yeah, it's the same one that that Sully was flying.
Oh, okay, yeah. So they'd be like, they'd say something back and they'd be like, see ya! You know, they always have these goofy things they say back and forth to each other. Anyways, I'm a few miles outside of Kingman, and what I do is on my nav log, I was telling you last night, I draw, you know, an example of what the runways are supposed to look like, you know, and so I have a somewhat orientation of where I am, and so I call, and you get the weather and stuff and the winds, but it doesn't tell you the active runway or anything like that, because, you know, that's up for you to figure out based on the winds.
Right.
So, I announce, you know, Kingman traffic, Archer 354, Mike Alpha, 10 miles out, inbound, full stop on runway 21, Kingman, right? And so I'm coming in and I'm like going, wait a minute, that don't look right. So I do a big 360 sort of thing. And then I get, lined up on what I thought was the runway. No. Not even a runway. I'm not even sure it was a taxiway because there was a bunch of cars parked and trucks and stuff. So I peel off another way, do another 360, and I go, oh, there it is. There's 2-1, you know. So I got landed. Luckily, no one else in the traffic with me at the time, and I don't think anyone else was on the radio because I never heard another person until I landed and pulled over. So no one got to hear my stupidity.
They were probably like, oh. We got a student in the air.
Yeah. I should announce that. Student pilot in the air. Be on the lookout. Yeah.
That's funny.
If they look lost.
And then it's going to be new pilot in the air. And then it's going to be, I have under 1,000 hours. Bear with me.
Yeah. I think I'll just fly to airports with towers from now on. I don't know.
We should all just get hats that say FNG.
Because I was trying to do all of this without the GPS this time as much as I can with just that map in my hand and looking out the window and all that, you know, just the map and the
trying to do a little pilotage.
Yeah. Sorry, my wife's yelling. for a friend of ours that's here. Okay. So anyways, just trying to use the map, look out the window, use my compass, and yeah, sure enough, I mix up the runway that I'm trying to land on. But anyways, I get it down and get it landed. Great big huge runway, which is nice. There's a bunch of regional jets sitting over there that look like I think they're going through some sort of restoration or something. There was a bunch of Continental RJs sitting there that were kind of mothballed.
Those look cool. It looks like they had purchased them or something, and they were maybe doing some upgrades or something to them.
Yeah, maybe they were going to turn them into freighters or something. I don't know, or personal use, like just customize them and resell them or something. I don't know, because they had like white paper all over the windows. Every window was whited out. Everything was like looked like it was mothballed, but I don't know.
Seems like it's painted.
Might have, yeah, could have been.
Hey, while I got a side thought, since I'm before I forget about it, you're talking about using the compass and stuff. Do you guys have to constantly change your heading bug when you were flying? I mean, I know you're supposed to look at about every your HI.
Yeah, my HSI.
Every 15 minutes.
I was checking it every 15 minutes, but I was actually having to adjust it about every 5.
That's about right.
Huh.
Especially under low power. Low power kills it.
Oh, really? The slower you go?
Well, it's the less power because your vacuum system isn't delivering quite its full potential. Because initially, like, you'll set it on the runway. You know, if you set it like right before you get on the runway or on the runway,
mm-hmm.
and by the time you get up to TPA or above it, or your first thing and trying to get your first fix, first thing you need to do is reset it, because I guarantee it's going to be off.
Oh, okay. Good tip. I'm going to look into that for the next one.
One of the things, the first cross-country I had, I mean, it was constantly I was behind on it, and then after that, I am on top of it all the time.
Well, I will be checking into that.
Yeah, because the drift is pretty noticeable.
Mm. So anyways, I park at what I thought was the restaurant. I don't know what building it was or whatever. I just parked at anything that was the closest thing to the restaurant. I figured I'd go in and have a sandwich or whatever. So I park and get out, and I did find the restaurant. I was parked somewhat in front of it there. Went inside and had a nice Philly cheesesteak. It was tasty.
Nice.
Had another guy came in just after me in a nice Navion, which is one of my favorite planes. I love those things. So we chit-chatted for a little bit. I guess it was for sale. I went out and took some pictures of it. Those are cool planes. And then headed back to Phoenix. I was gonna go to, like I said, Prescott, but the winds were just getting ridiculous, and they were picking up there at Kingman too. When I left, they were gusting to like 18, but it was straight down the runway, and so I had a headwind. Of gusts of up to 18 just right off the bat. So
wow.
I leapt off the field quite quickly. Left turn or U-turn actually back towards Phoenix. So I had a decent tailwind going back. And here's the part that you guys are going to laugh your ass off at me. So I'm coming out of Kingman, and it's just mountainous there. Like I said, I was 8,500 feet going in or heading that way. Kingman's not near that high. I forget what it is off the top of my head. 4,000, 5,000. Oh, wait. I don't have it written down. I thought I did. I don't know. Anyways, it's up there quite a bit. So anyways, it's just mountainous on each side, and I've just got all this wind knocking me around, and anyways, after about 20 minutes of that, I'm getting sick.
Mm.
I'm starting to sweat. I've got the vents blowing all over me, and it's just bumpy, up down, up down, up down, up down for like 20-30 minutes. Finally, I'm like going, oh my god, I'm actually gonna throw up while I'm flying this damn plane.
That sucks.
And so I reach into my bag. I've got 4 air sick bags. I always take them every time I leave a regular commercial flight. So anyways, sure enough, I take my headset off and I just start. I got a hold of the plane with my left hand and a air sick bag in the right hand, just going, you know.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there like sweating and puking and just, it was just horrible. And anyways, I ended up using three of those air sick bags over the next 15 minutes.
Wow.
And it was just a horrible thing. I hope no one ever has to do it, because trying to fly and vomit all at the same time is not a good day.
That sucks.
It did suck.
Sorry.
So thinking back to my delicious Philly cheesesteak,
oh,
might not have been the best idea at the time to have for lunch, especially when it was kind of, you know, bumpy going in or whatever, because you got those mountain waves of air coming over, and I don't know. I really wasn't all that hungry, but I just thought, hey, I've been in the air for a while, might as well just, you know, fuel up a little bit. But yeah, that was nasty. Nasty. And so I get my flight following LA Center, Albuquerque Center. And then Albuquerque Center releases me. This is weird. Either I heard them wrong or I did something wrong. But I played it back and I heard them right. But Albuquerque Center released me to Phoenix Approach. But I'm like going, I shouldn't be on Phoenix Approach yet, because I'm still quite a ways out from Deer Valley. I mean, I'm a long ways out from Phoenix still. So I call Phoenix Approach and they said that I was still, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles from their airspace. But Albuquerque Center said, Archer 354 Mike Alpha, contact Phoenix Approach on 120.2 or whatever it was. And I did, but you know, they weren't going to help me. And so I think I even went back to Albuquerque Center. Or did I? No, I don't think I did. I just kept with what I had. I kept Phoenix Approach on my radio, even though I wasn't with them, and just flew in. Then I grabbed them for the last few miles. But anyways, made it back to Phoenix safely. And right after I landed, the guys where do I keep the plane?
Cutter.
Yeah, Cutter. Thank you. The guys at Cutter marshaled me over to a different area to park the plane than I normally park. And I open up the door. I'm like, what am I doing? What am I parking here for? He goes, oh, someone's taking the plane right now. I was like, oh, great. I just puked, you know, in these bags. It probably stinks all over, you know, in this place. You know, luckily I didn't like get it anywhere, which is nice. But so anyways, I'm walking out of the plane and I've got these three puke bags in my hand that I'm heading to the trash can with. And the guy renting the plane with his son or daughter, I can't remember, was getting ready to get in the plane and stuff. So I had to get rid of that and go get my stuff, go back to the plane, get my bag all put together and leave. And I told him that I got sick in the plane, but, you know, I didn't get it anywhere. So I'm sorry if it smells. It was embarrassing. So that was my big long flight. Unfortunately, I didn't make it over to Prescott for three landings. But since I had planned for it but couldn't execute it because that my instructor gave me credit for it anyways, which was nice. All right, so did I fly last Sunday? No. All right, so yeah, so that was 4 weeks ago, Kingman. 3 weeks ago, I flew to Marana, and I've been wanting to fly to Marana for like 2 months now. I've been trying to find someone that would meet me there for breakfast or whatever, and I just can't, for whatever reason, get it worked out. Hawaiian Mike, CFI, was going to try and meet me there, and then weather screwed that up, and that was a month and a half ago, and he hadn't been able to make it since. And then this 3 weeks ago when I had it planned, my buddy, Todd, who had just got his private ticket, that week, I think it was, or maybe the week before. You know, this was Sunday. He got his ticket on Saturday. So I asked him if he wanted to go, and at first he said yes, and then he ended up not being able to make it. So I said, the heck with it. I'm just going to fly there anyway. So So Deer Valley to Marana is 97 miles, and Marana is about 20 miles north of Tucson. So this is my first time going that far south, and it was real cool. Transitioned Phoenix Sky Harbor's Bravo. I always like doing that. Hit up the Stanfield VOR. I'm familiar with that, so that was cool. Then past Arizona City. And then my next thing on my checkpoint was this place called Picacho Stage Field, and it's a little heliport. And I'd used Google Earth, so I knew exactly what I'm supposed to be looking for. It's this kind of rectangle, cement with all these circular heliport things and lines going out. Like, I don't know if they use it for practicing shooting approaches, but there was no facilities really there. It didn't look like there was any buildings. It was just,
Do they have it? I just found this out today, and this is maybe what one of this place is, but is it a big rectangular piece of asphalt out in the middle of nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
I found out from my instructor what this is. Those date all the way, and they run all the way up and down the West Coast. Mm-hmm. They date back to when airliners used to have not so reliable engines, and every so many, I don't know, 100 miles or so, hundreds of miles, they would have a 1 mile patch, so no matter which way the wind was blowing, if they had engine problems, they could put the plane down.
Huh. Well, so, from the look of this, I wouldn't even think I could land this Archer there. It didn't seem that long.
No, because the Chico Airport that I landed on was just like that. So you've got, runway 31 right was on the edge, which was a nice big runway, was on the edge of this asphalt, and all the way across the left was this huge patch of asphalt. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, once you start flying up and down the coast here, you'll see them all over the place.
Hmm.
So I was just curious, maybe that's what that was.
Well, this was a fairly good-sized rectangle, almost on the square side, but just a little bit longer than it was wide.
Uh-huh.
And it had like four or five H's with a circle around it, and then a line running from it, the length of the rectangle.
Interesting.
So it was almost like they use it for an approach type thing. I don't know. It's a heliport, so I don't know.
Cool.
Then next thing on the list is Pinal Airport. Now, Pinal is known for having jumpers there all the time, so you got to stay 5 miles outside of it. And my straight line was cutting right through the edge of it, so I veer off to the right before I get to it, and I get on the radio and I just said Pinal traffic, Archer 354 Mike Alpha. I'm about 8 miles to the northwest. Is just want to know if you got any jumpers in the area. And someone called back and said, yeah, we got jumpers here, and be on the lookout for two twin otters working at Marana with jumpers. I'm like, oh, great, that's exactly where I'm going. So, and there was no – see, this type of thing is in the – when you call in for a brief, this type of thing is one of the things that they give you, is whether or not, there's jumpers in the vicinity and stuff like that. But they didn't mention anything at Marana. So anyways, from Pinal, even before Pinal, you can see Pinal and you can see Marana because they're only 9 miles apart. So, and I was at 5,500 feet, you could see both of them. So, anyways, I get off Pinal's radio and jump on Marana's and get the weather and stuff, and I call into Marana and announce my position and my intention and stuff. And so I'm heading straight in to runway 12. Heading straight in for runway 12, but I peel off to the left and then head down I-10 and then go to the right and enter a left downwind for 12. And I land and there was one other person in front of me, and that's so I got to follow one other person in, just I was a few miles behind him. I land and then I have no idea. Again, where the airport or where the restaurant is, and they have crossing runways and stuff. So, it's so much easier to tell from the sky, but once you're on the ground, it's hard to tell which way to go. That's why that's where the 4th Flight and the the little ground maps and everything come in to play real well, I bet. But I ain't got one of those, so I taxied off and made it over to the restaurant and got out of the airplane. And I was pushing it back with the tow bar and tied up, and I hear people talking and stuff, but there's no one around me, and I look up, and there's like 15 parachutes in the air coming down. So they were up there as I was coming down, apparently, but they weren't out yet. So that was really cool. I got to see I saw, you know, jumpers the whole time I was there. And the Twin Otters were Air Force Twin Otters, so that was pretty cool. I didn't know. I thought maybe they were part of the air show going on, because that weekend, Saturday and Sunday, was Luke Air Force's Luke Days. So there's a free air show that they do every other year out at Luke Air Force Base. These weren't the Golden Knights, so I don't know what they were doing. Just practicing, I guess. So went inside and had a good French toast breakfast, and came back out real quick and headed back to Phoenix. I
made sure there wasn't any bumpy weather.
Yeah, no, it was this is that, like I was telling you before, this was that day that it was so calm that it was just nasty and dingy, sure, and dirty out. It was just, the air was disgusting. You wouldn't even want to breathe looking at it, you know what I mean? It was
kind of that good LA smog basin.
You just want to have a air filter over your mouth or something. It was nasty. But it sure did make for a nice, clean flight, and it was a lot of fun. As I was taking off, I was following – well, actually, as I was running up, a kick-ass beaver had just pulled into the restaurant. Well, and cool. It looked like it was brand new. It was just a gorgeous beaver. It turns out – I looked up the tail number. It was a 1954. But this thing just looked like it was brand – the paint job was brand new anyways. Nice blue-white. I mean, the the radial engine on it, the picture I took, just looks like you could have breakfast off of it. It was that clean. Gorgeous plane. So I followed a Baron out so I wouldn't get lost. I followed a Baron out back to runway 12. And I saw the Twin Otters. They were both put away, so I knew they weren't in the air at the time. They were just taxiing off to the side, tying down themselves, so they were all done. So followed this Twin Baron out, and also saw a Sukhoi. A Sukhoi, one of the stunt planes. I don't know which model was, like an SU-56 or something. I forget the model. But one of the little aerobatic stunt planes. So that was real cool. And then what else? A nice Satabria. I was sitting there doing touch and goes as I was taxiing up to the run-up area. So I followed followed them out after she did a touch and go. I took off after her and headed back to Phoenix. And on my way back, I found that Picacho Stagefield heliport. So I saw it on the way home, but I didn't see it on the way in. But now I know exactly where it is, so I'll be able to spot it the next time. So going back home, I had a nice little tailwind at one point. And here's where you're gonna laugh at me. You guys are gonna laugh at me again. I was transitioning class Bravo, and I was just, you know, I was just crossing the ends of the runways at Sky Harbor, and I was showing about 120, 121 knots indicated, and a ground speed of 152 or so.
Wow.
I mean,
you got me beaten.
Little Archer was screaming, and I wasn't even near full power. I mean, I had a nice tailwind. Let's see, what was that? Marana. So on the way home, I was at 6,500 feet coming home, and as I was crossing Sky Harbor, they transition you from one side to the other, you know, the Phoenix approach, south side, north side. They transition me over to the north side, and I get with that guy, and then he says after I cleared the runways, he tells me to go down to 4,000 or below. So now I'm descending, so I pull back the throttle, but I'm not really losing any speed because I got a nice tailwind anyways. And from Phoenix to Deer Valley is 16 miles away. So I'm cooking. towards Deer Valley. I've pulled back the throttle quite a bit, but I'm descending. Once I get to 4,000 feet, I get the Archer 354 Mike Alpha. What did he say that, you know, he released me and told me to squawk VFR. So I got done with him. I jump on Deer Valley's ATIS and get the weather and everything, and I call into Deer Valley, and I do it like this. Deer Valley Tower, Archer 354, Mike Alpha. I'm 5.5 miles out to the south, inbound the land, full stop with India. You know, because I was getting real close to their airspace, you know. And I didn't get a response back. He called somebody else, and he called, what'd he say? He said, aircraft calling Deer Valley, say again. I said, Deer Valley Tower, Archer 354, Mike Allen now, 4 miles out, inbound to land, full stop with India. Archer 4, Mike Alpha, you're already within the Delta. Enter right traffic, or enter the inner right downwind of beam the tower, blah, blah, blah. And so anyways, I was busted. I done it wrong.
Oops.
Yeah. I was a bad boy.
You didn't get a phone number, did you?
So I land, and they said, Archer 4 Mike Alpha, take down this phone number. And so I was like, what? And they said, we have a phone number for you. Please call this phone number after you get parked. So I was like, okay. So I called in, and they were just super nice. They didn't yell at me or anything. They just said, I called in. I go, yeah, this is the pilot of Archer 354, Mike Alpha, calling the tower. And they said, oh, okay. And someone just told me, said, hey, in the future, we need you to call in, but sooner than you did, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I knew it. I blew it. I told him, I said, I had such a nice tailwind coming in. I was going way too fast. I didn't slow up near as soon as I did. I should have peeled off to the left or to the right or went over the top of you guys. But I didn't. I said, I'm a student pilot. I messed that up and I knew better. And he was just super nice to me. He didn't, no issues.
That's cool.
Yeah. It could have been a bad thing for sure, but learning lesson, I won't do it again. I knows better. I knew better when I did it. Yeah, but
now you really make sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, learn two things. Don't eat big, ginormous, greasy sandwiches prior to flying in extremely bumpy weather. And don't be so enthralled that you're kicking ass with the speed and the single engine Archer that you don't bust airspace. So I've learned my lesson.
Look at me, I'm doing Baron speeds.
That's right. I was kicking ass. I was almost to the yellow arc on that sucker.
Wow.
I did the yellow arc before with my instructor coming back from Prescott several months ago. But you can really tell a difference too at that speed. I mean, the plane feels different. I don't know how fast we were doing that time. I think I was doing about 160 miles an hour ground speed. But wow. But we only did that for a couple of minutes. I dialed it way back. So, anywho, that's all my flying stories. Oh, what else? One other story. So the week after I went to Kingman, my buddy Todd on that Sunday came over to Deer Valley and picked me up because he had just got his license. So he came over to Deer Valley and picked me up in one of their Archers, and it was or Cherokees as it were. And let me tell you, this thing. And I know I fly in a nice plane, but I mean, it was just sad that people don't take care of their equipment any better than this, considering how expensive airplanes are. And I know school planes get beat up more, a little bit more maybe, but dang.
That
one
beat up?
It was in some sad shape. Some sad shape.
That's too bad.
The radio, you had to have the external speaker on or you weren't hearing the person.
Wow.
It was that bad. So it was just quite the rattle trap, and especially for what they were charging, you know, the plane I was flying was cheaper. It's a bad deal.
That's too bad.
Anyways, he got checked out in one of the their nicer planes the other day, so next time we fly, maybe we'll try that. But so we went flying around and stuff and practiced some slips and some stalls and stuff like that out in the Northwest practice area. And he's not familiar with the area that I practice in because he's on the east side of town. I'm on the west side of town. And where else? We flew up to flew into another airport I hadn't been into, which was where is it? I don't know. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But anyways, into another little uncontrolled airport, but they were closed. I mean, they didn't, the FBO wasn't open or anything, so we just turned around and went home. But it was bumpy that day, too. Real bumpy. So, I don't mind the G's and the turns and the up and the down, but that constant up and down thing, that
just
gets me.
Just
I can't do that.
Beat up.
Yeah. I love roller coasters. I can do those all day long, but something that just goes around in a circle for 10 minutes, I'll throw up all over the place. I can't do the same motion over and over and over again. So, anywho.
I hit some major turbulence like that going into Vegas 2 years ago. It was just the 737 that I was in was just getting beat up, and I'm thinking, I can handle, like you, I can handle a lot of that. But when we were getting just bounced and dropped and thrown up and dropped again, I was like, okay, I'm not having fun here. And I know my wife doesn't like to fly, period. especially, someday maybe by the act of God, she'll actually get in a plane with me in a small plane. But she has a fear of flying in large airplanes, and I thought for sure that she was just going to white knuckle it. And she was like, whatever. And I'm the one that was actually holding on going, this isn't fun.
This ain't right.
Get me out of here, because we were going from Vegas to Burbank and just got beat up.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm right there with you. That's I don't like that. And I've only in the Archer, I've only had, I think, one or two flights where we got bounced around for just a little bit and kind of got into some clean air. I'll have to definitely keep the no greasy food in mind.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's something that will go with time. You know, just the more you fly, the more you get used to it.
I did buy
some of those little bands that go across your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if those do anything. I think they're a joke, but who knows? Maybe they actually have some validity to them.
There was one in the box for this that Garmin 396 that I bought.
It came with it?
It had one in there. I got a whole package of stuff. My buddy's boss is a pilot, and he hasn't flown like a year and a half, I think. So he was getting rid of a couple of headsets, so now each of my girls have their own headsets. And I got this 396, one of those bands, this really nice metal knee board, a bunch of it, whatever else he could throw in the box for like $350.
Nice. That was a really good deal.
That was a
really
good deal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The 396 itself is like $600 used, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, okay, I'll take it. So, you know, each of my girls now have their own headsets, so they're all happy. But anyway, yeah, it has one of those wristbands. I'm like, I look at the in the box, and I'm like, really? No, I'm not even going to try this. You know, I know of a few people that swear by them, but
supposedly it's a little pressure point, I guess, that it's pushing on. But we'll see. I'll let you know if it does anything.
Yeah,
I know. I'm not going to be taking any Dramamine or anything like that because I don't want to get tired while I'm flying.
No.
Yeah. So. I don't have any issue with the bouncy stuff.
No?
It just doesn't bother me at all. But I never got car sick. I could read in cars and all I wanted.
Mm.
Never bothered me.
I think as long as I'm in the left seat, I think I'd be okay because it's I don't know if it's the illusion that you're in control.
That's what I thought.
But at least, you know, I think that because I'm there, I feel like I have more control over what's going on. Did you have an option at all of changing altitude at that point in time?
Yeah, I tried. I wasn't on it. Anything specific? I was at 7,500 coming home. I went down a little bit, and it was no different. You know what it was? It's just there's these two mountain ridges that you're in between going into Kingman.
Uh huh.
And after I climbed over the other one, I was fine, but it just took too long to get there.
Gotcha.
I would probably have had to have been at well over 10,000 feet to actually not really feel anything, because the mountains are in the almost 7,000 foot range.
Gotcha.
So anyways, that's about it for me.
So that wraps it up for you?
I think so.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
All right, John, how about you?
Anything going on, Johnny?
Mr. Newly Minted Pilot?
Mm-hmm.
It's not so new anymore.
That's true.
No, it is. But I don't know if I said last time. I did get my hard card, my plastic card now.
And are they not doing the pictures yet, right?
No.
Is that going to happen or no?
No, I haven't heard anything where Congress passed it, or passed anything for that matter. But yeah, I don't think that's they proposed doing it, but none's happened to it yet.
Mm.
As far as I've seen, somebody proved me wrong, I guess.
Any flying at all in the last month?
Yeah, I took up my dad.
What,
2 weeks ago or something now? So this was his first flight, and I was a little nervous the day before because it looked like it was going to be pretty windy again. And after last time, I was a little more cautious about that. So I was kind of watching it, and so I went up that morning because it looked like it may be okay. You know, it wasn't too bad. There wasn't any fronts coming through or anything. I got my brief, and the only issue was that it was a little windy. So I went up, and you know, I told my dad, I'm like, you know, it may be a little bumpy. I'm not sure. You know, cause I knew my dad wouldn't freak out about it or anything. Like if it was my mom, I wouldn't have done it, but, I knew my dad would probably be fine. And so I was like, look, if you have any issues or anything, let me know right away. We can come back. You know, we may not be able to do the whole plan I had planned. Depends. We'll get up there and we'll see. We may just stay in the pattern. We may just go to the maneuvering area or whatever. You know, I was like, I don't know. We'll just have to see. You know, it may be fine. So I made sure, you know, he was okay with it, and, you know, let him know what was going to happen. Just went in, got the keys, did the pre-flight, and, you know, we went on our way. And, I mean, we got up, and for all the weather reports, man, it was as smooth as could be. Pretty much the whole flight was just smooth. It was great.
Good deal.
Okay.
Did you go to anywhere specific, or?
No, we just did a tour of northern Delaware.
Mm.
South of Wilmington, not quite all the way north, but we just went up the Chesapeake Bay from where I am. Kind of went alongside the Aberdeen Proving Grounds restricted area on the eastern shore. Went up to the Delaware Canal, went across the Delaware Canal to the Delaware Bay, and then came down the bay to Dover, and then went back to Martin State. So it's a nice little hour tour up there. You know, so we got up and started going across the bay, and it was just really smooth, which I was so happy for. You know, I could tell my dad was really enjoying it. Like, he was just thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Good deal.
And he's a big boater, so flying over the Chesapeake Bay, over all the areas that he usually boats, it was interesting, too, because he's just like, man, he's like, it looks so small from up here. He's like, it takes an hour to get across this thing. And I'm like, well, we just did it in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So that's 20 miles an hour is different than 120 miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's funny. When I was telling my daughter where I flew in today, it usually takes us just over 2 hours to drive. And I flew up there in 35 minutes. And I was like, cost me less than $20 in fuel in 35 minutes. guess what we're doing from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, we went on our way. It was a pretty, nice flight. Got some cool scenery seeing the Delaware Canal and all that. It was definitely windy. Because I was definitely getting I was crabbing pretty good, but it wasn't turbulent at all, which was really nice. So we kind of went around. It was a pretty, I don't remember too much. It was just, explaining how the plane flies, all the different stuff. And, we're talking about all the scenery on the ground and all that kind of thing. I flew him over a little north of Dover Raceway, which I've been to a couple races with him before, NASCAR races. And so it was kind of cool seeing the, for him to see the racetrack. I had actually flown that way a couple times when I went to Wildwood for my long cross country. So I had been out there before. And then on the way back, he started asking some questions, and I let him, he's first passenger to take me up on the hand the controls over for a little bit.
I was going to ask you that. Cool.
Yeah, he did. He took me up on it. He could not do straight and level. It was kind of straight with a right bank.
You had a quartering like crosswind type of thing off your nose a little bit?
I think it was some of that, and I think it was some of he thought he was doing straight, and then he'd look around and he'd be like, wait, I'm not. And then I was like, all right, well, why don't you try turning? And then he just very gently put it in like a 5-degree bank, and I was like, put a little more in there.
I mean, turn it.
It's a turn, not like drift.
Yeah, the wind can do that much to us.
Yeah. So, obviously it's the first time he'd ever touch the controls of a plane, so it was kind of funny.
So you showed him a 360 degree 45 degree bank?
No, I didn't. I did show him slow flight though, because he was, I forget what, how we got on that topic of slow flight, and I was just like, you can fly all day in slow flight here, so I did a pre-maneuver check, throw it into slow flight, and showed him that. And then so that was kind of cool. And then I pulled the power back for a couple seconds and went to glide just to show him we wouldn't fall out of the sky, if we lost an engine, which really surprised him.
Of how it'll say steady and level and everything, even
it's not
you want to go
falling out of the sky in a burning fireball. We could fly it. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't even notice we were losing an altitude. I mean, I only dropped like 200-300 feet, but that just kind of really surprised him. And then we came back. I did some pattern work. I wanted to make sure I had three landings in, just in case they didn't get a chance to fly in the next month or so. So we did some pattern work. Now, when we came back, it did get bumpy as soon as we came back over the bay. It was pretty bumpy in the pattern, which was fun because I was getting some good crosswind landings in. And my dad was like, oh, man, that was awesome. I can't believe you did that with how bumpy it was. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, that was a horrible landing.
You're like, that's two of us.
Yeah, so, he thought I was doing great. And I'm just sitting there the whole time. I'm like, oh, man, this sucks. I'm like, I just bounced that one. Oh, man. And what was funny is the last time he came around, and I came in, did one. Got an extended downwind on the next one because two warthogs were taken off. And then, which was kind of cool too, because my dad got to see the warthogs take off. And then I came back around and I heard a King Air waiting. And the controller was like, hold short, cleared me to land. I saw another guy pull in behind the King Air, and then I had two warthogs sitting there on the other side.
So all of that heavy metal was waiting on you.
So I have four. Yeah, I had four bits of heavy metal sitting there waiting on me. And the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm laughing. I'm just like, man, look at all these guys waiting for my little slowness to come in. And my dad's laughing. And then I came in. I tried to get it down and stopped a little too quick. I was forcing it a little bit. and ended up ballooning a little bit coming out of ground effect and had to drift back down and land. Which, the whole time, like, after that happened, I was just like, oh, man, I just had four pilots sit there and watch that. So.
Good thing there wasn't scorecards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I definitely learned a little bit there. It's kind of hard to land it on a spot in a crosswind like that.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was a pretty uneventful flight. My dad had a blast. He definitely wants to do it again. So I've got three happy passengers now.
That's awesome.
Three for three. Not a bad average.
Well, my friend went with me too, but he was a pilot, so he don't count.
he don't get to,
you know how I would say, 'cause he likes it anyway.
Yeah. He's a given.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I wish my dad was around for that. I think he would like it too. My mom, I think, will be scared to death if I can ever get her to go. Of course, she's in Missouri, so, but she comes out. You know, she's only been out here to Arizona maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 times in the 20 years I've been here. So I go back there almost every year. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Well, my mom was terrified, and she ended up loving it. I think just for some people, you just got to get them in there and then show them that there's nothing to really be scared of. And once they see that and they see how awesome it is, they're like, oh, wait, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll yeah. see. I think my brother or my grandfather's next. Or I'll get checked out in the G1000. I haven't decided yet.
Yes.
Nice.
So if anybody wants to throw me some pointers on transitioning from steam gauges to the G1000... I would gladly accept it.
Well, if you were any good at video games when you were younger, you'll be just fine.
I plan on doing a lot of, probably get a couple books, do some studying if I am going to do it, and make sure that I have a pretty good handle on it.
Yeah, that's a lot of computer before work.
Before I even go to the flight school.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, spend as little as time with them, paying them to teach you as you can.
Exactly.
Find a bunch of YouTube videos and websites, and I'm pretty sure Garmin has the same thing that they do for the 430 and whatnot. You know, they got the simulator for it, I think.
Yeah, I think you have to pay for that one though.
Oh, do you, for the G1000 one?
Yeah, that's what I've seen so far. I could be wrong. Somebody, please prove me wrong, because I really would like to use that.
The 172 in Flight Sim 10,
mm-hmm.
It got some G1000s in there, and they're, from what I understand, they're pretty close.
Yeah, they're pretty spot on. They just don't have 100% all the functionality, but right. Probably everything you're going to do for VFR flight, you'll be just fine. It probably
no
just
problem with that.
Yeah, it probably just doesn't have some of the stuff for the really specific IFR stuff, but for the most part.
That's all fine and good, but I have X-Plane and a Mac.
Well, I'm sure you can find...
But, yeah, I should look.
For the X-Plane.
But, yeah, I don't have anything that runs Windows right now, or Flight Sim 10. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. So, I'm kind of excited for that. We'll see if I can fit it in. I may just take some other people up instead of spending the money on that right now.
Get some time in.
Yeah, get some time with some passengers, some good cross country stuff. You know, maybe later on. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't decided. It's kind of, I have a limited amount of money left on some stuff. So where do I put it? You know.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get into a good club or something. I just haven't had the chance yet. Hopefully I'll get some good flying this summer. Maybe hitch a ride to Oshkosh or something.
There you go.
Yeah, that'd be a fun trip.
I'm starting to plan for, so. Yeah, I will be there.
I don't think I'm going to make it this year, unfortunately. Next year for sure, not this year, though.
I have tentative clearance. It's a matter of making it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have some other We have some other specific vacation plans that we have to do first. So chances are slim to none for this year. Next year, I think it's on, though.
Cool.
So
cool.
Well, we can roll into shout-outs if we're all done.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Yep.
I just got one quick shout-out, and that's to Bill Williams, Bill Will. He's going to come pick me up over at Deer Valley on Thursday and take me up in a 182.
Nice. So
that'll be
nice.
Cool. Something different. He said that we could – he has a little – he's in a club over there at his airport. He's at Stellar Airport, and that's it's a private airport. So I had offered to fly, get the Archer and go fly over there and meet him. But he said I had to get checked out to fly into that airport. So I was like, okay, well. He asked me if he goes, would you rather I bring the 172, which is closer to what you're flying, and it's a little newer, or the big boy? He goes, I don't fly the 172 very often. I said, yeah, bring the big one. Bring the 182. Let's go see it.
Nice.
Nice.
So we'll get to go try out the big Cessna. That'll be fun.
Cool.
So thanks, Bill. Who's up next?
I'll go.
Okay.
I've just got two. First one goes to my new instructor, Bo Perry, chief instructor for Mach 5 Aviation. Thank you for having some faith in me today and for picking me up as a new student pilot. I think we're gonna do me good, and it'll help me get to where I need to be with a lot more confidence. And the second one is to Darren Sorensen. He's at Shotgun F-15E. Darren was just deployed out to the sandbox, and we appreciate what you do for us, Darren. Fly safe. We'll see you when you get back. And that was it for me.
I have one that I can remember right now, which is to Mark, who I've been sending some emails back and forth. I know I mentioned him a couple podcasts ago. He was having some instructor issues, but found out last week, I believe. Yep. Last week that he had his first solo. So
congrats.
Congrats to him.
There you go.
That's awesome. And he kind of felt the same way I did, where he was nervous all the way till he got to the number, you know, to the threshold. And as soon as he pushed in the power, he was fine. So, congrats to him.
There's no do-overs on that feeling. That is just so awesome. Too bad you just can't...
Can that, you know, keep it.
Yeah, yeah. That is so fun.
Well, while I'm looking that up, shout out to anyone going to Oshkosh. Like I said, I'll be there the whole week. It's going to be awesome. Also, everyone at Sun and Fun this week, I wish I could be there.
Yeah, that's where
I had tried.
My buddy Dean's there right now.
I tried to go, but it just wasn't going to work, especially because I'm going to see the shuttle launch in April. So
nice.
That was kind of my one Florida trip for the spring. So, yeah. The other first solo that happened soon was Sam, Wired for Flight.
Yeah. That's right.
He had his first solo, so congrats to him as well.
Good job, Sam.
Good job, Sam.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern, so my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway. Chris?
Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ, and my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01. Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
This and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.
And you guys still with me?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on the phone with my wife.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I'm searching. Hang on.
Clocking.
All right, man.
I remember that tweet.
Yeah. I know a lot of people on Twitter missed it. My Twitter's been crazy lately. I can't keep up. especially after that tweet up, which was awesome. Anybody
you wore get your, into a you NASA... You wore your phone out, dude. You were hammering that phone.
I killed a T-Bolt in 6 hours. that was a really good battery time.
You bought two batteries, didn't you?
I had two batteries. I had an external. I'm getting a 1600 milliamp hour battery for Oshkosh, and I'm going to try to get a little solar charger so I can charge the external battery and then use that throughout the day and the night.
Some sort of custom backpack that you can put your car battery on with lights going over your shoulders.
I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to make this work.
You'll go back to Gen 1 cell phone brick. Yeah. Suitcase.
he's got a raincoat made out of solar materials. It's solar powered.
I've thought about it. Trust me. I'm thinking about the battery life on this phone, and I don't have an issue with it because of how I use it now. But every time I think about battery life, I'm thinking about how I'm going to manage it. Oshkosh. So
that's funny.
Yeah. This was our 10th episode.
It was.
Yes.
Did we get a prize?
Yeah, get a prize.
Fresh new 182?
Yeah.
You know what? And hopefully by...
650? G650?
Hopefully by episode 11, we can actually hear that Chris took his written.
Yeah, how about that?
Are they still doing those? You have to do those still? Can I just fly the damn plane?
You have, based on our original conversation, you have 2 days to take it.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening for some reason.
Schedule it.
Yeah.
You're never going to get your license.
Yeah, I'll just keep doing this. I can go take the plane, you know, and go fly by myself anywhere I want. What's the difference?
There's a lot.
Before next episode.
All right, guys, let's record next weekend.
Yeah,
right. That's what I'm thinking. Let's record in a second. I'll wait.